Good morning, all you beautiful people. It's nice to hear a compliment like that once in a while, isn't it? After all, you do come here to get things you don't get outside, don't you? So we're going for the cinematic effect today. Isn't that nice? So from time to time I might need to use the whiteboard to explain a few things as we go forwards on this adventure that we're all on, this journey, to understand the inner workings of the mind. It is not essential, but it helps just to have a visual representation of some of the concepts that we might dip our toes in. And this is a very familiar setup at the monastery. For those of you who have visited us, you'll know this. But you'll need the screens, I think, to see what's on the board from the back. So this is why we have the display above my head. As best as you can, try and look at me in my eyes, not above my head. So especially those at the front. If you can see the board just by looking at it directly, then that helps, because I need to talk to you, not to your chins. It feels more natural that way. Because when I look into your eyes and you look into mine, magic happens. So welcome again. I think we have a few new faces as well. Just give me a show of hands if you're here for the first time. Welcome. All right. We've got lots to get through today, so brace yourselves, fasten your seatbelts. Make sure there's an oxygen mask above your head, and in case of turbulence, the pilot will inform you. And when the mask drops, please put yours on before you put the mask of the person sat next to you. And that is true in so many ways. You've got to put your mask on before you put on those that are sat either side of you. Right, so before we begin then, as is customary, and to renew our oath, our pledge, our promise to ourselves, not to anybody else, but to ourselves, why we're here, our purpose here, let us take a moment to pay homage to the glorious one, the infinitely compassionate one, the unimaginably merciful one, the all-knowing one, the supremely enlightened one. He is our master, he is our guide, he is our teacher, the Supreme Buddha. So let us pay homage in reverence to his good name and observe the precepts as we take another step forward today on our journey to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Okay. To seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts, please repeat all together and after me.
Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranam gacchami.
Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyam pi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyam pi dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyam pi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyam pi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyam pi dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyam pi sangham saranam gacchami. Saranagamanam sampunnam. Panati pata veramani sikha padam samadhyami. Adinnadana veramani sikha padam samadhyami. Kamesu michhachara veramani sikha padam samadhyami. Musavada veramani sikha padam samadhyami. Suramiraya majja pamadatthana veramani sikha padam samadhyami. Tisaranena saddhim pancha silam dhammam sadhukam surakhitam katva. Aptamadena sampadetha. A little bird told me that you're going on a trip next week. Are you? Next Saturday? Where are you going? Paradise. Well, you can decide that for yourself when you get there. I see some blank faces, so I presume not everyone knows about this trick. Alright, I think you'll find out soon enough. So the organizers of this talk, this sermon, and the regulars at the Saturday English sermon at the monastery, they have very kindly got together and they've organized for your visit to the monastery next Saturday. How nice of them to do so. We're looking forward to receiving you. And I feel that when you come there, when you arrive, that might just be a new page in your lives. Just might. I don't want to stack them high and sell them cheap, but I think I'll leave that for you to decide when you get there. But we are so looking forward to receiving you there. Because you'll be joining the what we call the Panchani Sansamaha Pinkama, which is an event that we've been doing at the monastery for, I think, 15, this is the 15th of the 16th event. So there's two a month, so that makes it about 7 months, since January, since the dawn of the new year. And it marks the centenary of the number of monks at our monastery. So that is when we started it. 100 monks, of which 84 are higher ordained monks, such as myself. So we are observing the rains retreat at the monastery during this period. And I think it will be a sight to behold when you get there. I invite you to rejoice with a full heart as you witness the Mahasangha. So don't be looking for me there, okay? I was speaking to my teacher yesterday. I always do that. Whenever I leave the monastery, I go speak to him with my prayer mat and I seek his blessings. So last night, because by the time I leave in the morning, sometimes he stays up quite late in meditation, so by the time I leave, he's not up. So I usually go and talk to him the night before. So I asked him, "Sir, what should I inform our listeners from Rajagiriya who will be expecting at the monastery?" He said, here's what he said. He said, "Warn them." I said, "But about what?" He said, "Warn them about tough love." He is one of a kind, my Guru Handru. I've not seen someone like him yet. He's one of a kind. If you think I am a work of art, then imagine what the artist must be like. So he's got tough love. To be a great champion, a leader, a pioneer for an institution such as ours, whose aspiration is nothing other than Nibbana. So that is our logo, that is our slogan. I think you'll get a glimpse of that today in one of the videos that I intend on showing you. This is our slogan, for aspirants of Nibbana, exclusively for aspirants of Nibbana. Because we know why we're all here. We know why you're here. Nibbana is how we understand happiness. You know, you're living evidence that happiness is not to be found anywhere else. Aren't you all evidence of that? Yeah, so diverse, so multicultural, coming from all walks of life, you and I together. Right? We've all been there, done that, tried everything under the sun. So I think we are comfortably convinced, with conviction, that the only happiness that can be had has to be Nibbana. But I understand that you need to do Nibbana in and amidst your duties and responsibilities, and it's not for everyone to make this leap into the sasana in the way that I have been so fortunate to do. But that's okay, because there's a way that we all can walk towards Nibbana. You don't have to be a monk for that. But what you will need is guidance, as I do, as we all do. I think the only person that can claim to need no guidance is that man there, the Supreme Buddha, because he had no teacher. He had to make himself his own teacher. The Dhamma was his teacher. So he had to discover the Dhamma. But good old mortals like we don't need to be our own teachers. We have the honor and the privilege of finding teachers who are always happy and prepared to guide us. As we have been successful in every venture in life, in every journey, every walk we've taken in life, every detour that you took in life, to learn all the things that you have and to have become successful as you have. You know, your teachers were always there to guide you. We spoke about this a few weeks ago and we talked a lot on the topic of gratitude. But what you will see from Guru Andhru is tough love. So he asked me to warn you. Because he's quite traditional, in a nice way. And he's a proper father. So he's a father figure to all of us. And sometimes they might say things not in the slightest to offend, but he speaks, let's just say his words are sharper than a sword, sometimes he can be. When it comes to defilements, he will speak to you through your ears and right into your hearts, piercing any defilements that those words might come across. So I, for one, and all the other 450 or so individuals who now seek refuge at our monastery from the Noble Triple Gem, we've all been blessed enough to hear those words and to hear from him and seek and receive his guidance and to come this way in life. I'm happier for having met him. Did I tell you the story of our meeting? Yes, I did. Shall I tell it to you again? The happiest day of my life. When I first met him, he was just a layperson. And I thought he was just another macha. So that's how I greeted him. But later on I realized that he, although looks like every one of us, was a little bit different in a very good way. He's such a humble person. So when he gets off the Dharmasana, you wouldn't recognize the same man was on the chair a few moments ago. So anyway, that is an invitation for all of you. I think the organizers will be making their invitation to you perhaps shortly after the talk today. But I want to officially invite you to our home. I think a few of you I saw last week, they made their presence known in the monastery, so it was nice to see you there, and you're all welcome next Saturday, where you have the Panchani Sansa Mahapinkama. And one of these days, I think I briefly mentioned it, and then we turned our conversation to something else, because I wanted to explain to you what this Panchani Sansa is. Now you know I'm a scientist before I'm a monk, right? So everything I do has to make sense to me. I don't do things just because someone says so, just because it's in a book somewhere. The older the book, the more sagacious the Dhamma must be. I don't necessarily believe in that. It has to make sense to me, and it has to make practical sense. Panchanisansa. We speak of the five rewards. Anisansa are rewards. Adinava, if you could say, you could think of them as repercussions. So the rewards and repercussions. We have rewards for good deeds and repercussions of bad deeds. Now, I do understand that there may be a few amongst you who are a bit skeptical when it comes to give and get, as in karma and vipaka, but that's okay. I was in the same boat. Just leave it to time. But I'll tell you what there is. There's a philosophy that governs everything in this world. Now some people think that it is money. Money that has a dollar sign. Not so much money, but there's a universal currency that determines everything that happens in this world. There's a universal currency. Now like we have our currencies that we use when we travel, right? So we have the dollar in some countries, we have the pound in other countries, we have the lira in some countries, and we have the rupee here, and so on. There's a universal currency. No, it's not the dollar. Although that seems to be the benchmark in today's commercial interactions, it's not the dollar. It's the currency that gets you the dollars. That's the currency I'm talking about. It's the currency that has brought you here. It's the currency that has afforded you the comfortable lives that you have been able to achieve. It's the currency that's given you a loving family. It's the currency that has blessed you with good friends, noble association. It's the currency that feeds you. It's the currency that has kept you warm, when it's cold out there, and cool when it's warm out there. The currency I speak of is the universal currency of what? Merit, absolutely. Merit. Panchanisansa, the five rewards. I'll name them briefly. First of all, in Pali, Ayu. You may have heard of this. Vanna, Sapa, Bala, and Patibhana. Ayu, not are you. What are you going on about? Not that are you. Are you. The singular term for this is Ayusha, or vitality. You could think of it as longevity if you like, or vitality. Vanna, loosely translated to color, complexion, but it represents good health. Because how do you know when someone is in good health? You say they're in the pink of health, don't you? Because they look pink, pinkish. That is one. Good health. Sapa, comfort. Now comfort can be different for different people, right? Comfort for one person can mean comfort for somebody else. But whatever you refer to as comfort, here we are talking about comfort in the name of Nibbana, for the purpose of Nibbana. And I'll come to that in just a moment. Sapa. Comfort. Bala. What do you think bala is? Not the balaya. What is bala? Energy. Something you need. Energy. Energy to help you on the path to Nibbana. You need energy. It is with energy that you're going to be staying alert today, awake today. It is with energy that you've been able to get here today. Energy. And then finally, last but not by any means least, Patibhana. Now this word itself is so profound, Patibhana. But let's take it in its very simplest form for now. Patibhana is wisdom. The ability to penetrate. The ability to see things as they really and truly are. See, over the last few weeks, ladies and gentlemen, I think you're beginning to understand that the world that you thought is not the world that really exists. It's almost like you're living in the Matrix, for those who are able to relate to that anecdote. Yeah, it's almost like you're living in the Matrix. We live in a make-believe world, and in that world we create our suffering. So Patibhana is the knowledge, is the wisdom that enables us to see insightfully as to what there really is. See, today you struggle to give up things. What Patibhana will help you do is to realize that there is nothing that you're really holding on to give up in the first place. That is why in Buddhist philosophy there is nothing to let go. So let's not rush to let go of anything. Ayu, Vanna, Sapa, Bala and Patibhana Jnana. So, once again, that's vitality, good health, comfort, energy, and wisdom. These are the five things. Now, these are very simplistic explanations, right? As we go forwards, you will begin to understand that they have more profound and deeper meaning, but this is sufficient for us for now. These are the five things that I need you to be offering when you visit the monastery next week. So then you'll ask me, where do we find them, Swami Nuhasa? Can we find it in a good Atapirikara shop? This Ayu thing that you're talking about, where do we find it? Does it come by the kilo? What about Vanna? Does it come in bottles? Can we buy it bulk and then share it amongst all of us? Is that how it works? Unfortunately not. That's not how it works. See, it's not in the object that you offer. It's in the intention that you offer. You'll soon enough realize, if you haven't already, ladies and gentlemen, that in Buddhist philosophy, we don't really give a big place, we don't really give much significance to the object that is being offered. Now this might sound a bit unorthodox, unconventional, because perhaps in some other places, right, either in the sasana or elsewhere, right, value is measured by the value of the object. The bigger it is, the more merit you think or you've been promised, but not so much. The simplest example I can take is that of Anathapindika, as he offered the Jetavanarama to the Buddha and the Mahasangha, right? It was he who built the place. It was his land. All that, 84 crores in that day and age, you know, that was, I don't know, in today's day and age, you could probably buy half of the planet for whatever it was back then. He was a very wealthy merchant. So, that much he offered in purchasing the land and then building the monastery and offering it to the Mahasangha. Just imagine how he must have decorated the place and built it in all its glamour, because he was the chief benefactor of the Buddha Sasana. So the offering that he must have made couldn't have been a small one. Now this man, he makes his offering, having spent every dime and dollar that he had with him. And you know, the story goes that he earned for himself as a reward a castle in the heavens. But you know that it was a silver castle. This is how the story goes. But there was a bystander doing what? Just bringing his palms together and rejoicing in the offering. How much do you think he offered? Absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Not a penny, because he didn't have much at all to offer. But in his heart, there was joy, joyfulness, and gracefulness. He was overwhelmed by the joy of the offering that was being made to the Buddha Sasana. He was thinking about all the good that would come to the Buddha, to the Mahasangha, and those who would follow in their footsteps. You know, to this day, we still use that name, Jetavanarama. So that was the offering that he made. In his mind, ladies and gentlemen, he offered Ayuvarna Sapabala and Patibhana Jnana. See, when an offering is made, it doesn't have to be yours for you to rejoice in those merits. I have a very simple example of that. You know, when you make offerings and you want to transfer the merits to your departed, yeah, perhaps to your parents, your late parents, your grandparents and so on, it is not their offering that you are making, it is your offering. But you transfer the merits to them, don't you? The truth of this is really, you can't really transfer merits. What? Have we been fooled all this time? You can't really transfer merits like that. Merits is not something you can transfer. Merits is something you earn for yourself. This is good news, not bad news. Don't you worry. There is never bad news in the Buddha Sasana. There is always only good news. Although we refer to it as merit transfer, because this is a crude translation of the word pratyanumodana. You've heard of the Dasa Punya Kriya, the 10 meritorious deeds. I don't know where this sermon is heading today. It's just going here, there and everywhere. We'll see where it ends. You've heard of the Dasa Punya Kriya, for the 10 meritorious deeds, and one of them is the pratyanumodana, right? And we have crudely translated it to transferring of merits. So now at the end of a sermon, what do we do? What does the Swaminwansa invite you to do? Let us all now get together and transfer the merits. Swaminwansa, you've been telling that to us for like the 100 times, and now you're telling us that you can't transfer merits? We've been shortchanged, Swaminwansa. No, not so. It's okay for you to think that you're actually transferring merits, because there's no harm done there. What's really happening, ladies and gentlemen, is those who wish to rejoice in what you do, they observe what you're doing and they rejoice in it. And in doing so, they earn their own merits. So it is not your merits you are transferring to them, because if you did so, then, you know, as you transfer your merits to them, your bank balance reduces. That would be a foul deal, wouldn't it? I have done all the meritorious deeds. I cooked the meal. I packaged it up. I brought it to the temple. I offered it to the Swaminwansa. I had to sit there listening to the sermon as well. And all that, after all that, I have to transfer all those merits to that wretched old man. That's not how it works. It's not how it works. That is why it's called the Pratyanumodana, not Punyanumodana. Although we think it's Punyanumodana, it's what we've come to refer to it as. It's not a Punyanumodana, it's a Pratyanumodana. Pratyanumodana is a complementary action. In other words, when we do the merit transfer, right? So from now on, we'll still refer to it as a merit transfer. You know, just we don't want to be odd or weird, right? So because if you go somewhere else and you say, you know, we're not transferring merits, we're just inviting others to rejoice in the merits, you know, you might look a bit odd. So we don't want to be odd, we don't want to be weird, we're just very, you know, outwardly we're very conventional. Inwardly, we are very unconventional. That's the way we are. Guru Hamdra always reminds me, be like a swan. You've seen a swan paddling in the water, right? Very calmly and coolly. It just floats on the water, doesn't it? But look underneath, what is it doing? Yeah. You know, like it's going out of fashion. Like there's no tomorrow. Like it's running for its life. It's flapping its little legs, right, fluttering its little legs to try and get across the water. But you don't see any of that. It's all behind the scenes. In much the same way, right, our progress in the Buddha Sasana, our progress towards our Nibbana, shouldn't be a display, a demonstration to others around us. It's a purely personal, it's a very personal thing. That is why once I said, you know, you're never going to find out whether I am a Sotapanna or a Sakrudagami or Anagami or an Arahant. The way you saw me on the first day is the way you will see me right at the end. In that way, I am never going to change. Whatever transformation happens within me is a very personal thing for me, as it should be for you. Because that is the way it ought to be. Because otherwise what could happen is, sometimes, you know, this becomes a competition. As everything is out there. Everything becomes a competition. Right? If you've got a mark at school, then the next person wants to find out how much you've got and then compare it with theirs. We've seen this so many times, over and over and over again. If you go to a meditation program somewhere, right? I'm not saying everywhere, some places, right? They'll start discussing and asking you, you know, what has begun to happen within you? Are you beginning to see lights? Are you beginning to levitate? Are you beginning to float? Right? Are you on the first jhana or the second jhana? Right? They begin to ask these questions of you. I'm not saying it's necessarily bad. What I'm saying is, you could get into the wrong. You could get into a lurch. You could get yourself lost, because then it becomes more about the competition. Because we are very competitive as human beings. It is almost inbuilt within us, that competitive nature. So even when it comes to Nibbana, which is in fact giving up the competition, sometimes we can become competitive about Nibbana itself. This is why it is said, you know, when a mother gives up her son to the Sasana, the mother is invited to make a wish for her son. Conventionally and contemporarily, the wish that we ask a mother to make is, my dear son, as you go forth today into the Sasana, may you never receive any honor, praise or reward. May you receive blame for any of your shortcomings and wrongdoings. May you receive admonition from your teacher, but never praise or honor. Because what does praise and honor do? It kills you. Because pride is the first deadly sin. And you know this. When pride gets the better of you, then everything else, including the meritorious deeds and the meritorious thought, all of that goes out the window. So anyhow, coming back to the point I was making earlier, when you get to the monastery next week, right, and you take part in this almsgiving, which is going to be to around 115 of us monks, you will also see the anagarikas, and the Anagarikas, all 80 or so of them. You'll also see the little children there. We have a youth academy where we take in from time to time young individuals aged 14 to about 16 years, and we train them over a period of 2 years. We train them on good virtues, on morals, as well as their conventional education. They get that as well. So we school them, but at the same time we teach them how to become a great man, a good human being. Because we understand that out there, usually, if not always, again there's competition for good grades and a competition to get into universities and to get the good jobs. But that is not what matters at the end of the day. When all is said and done, when you're alone and you're on your deathbed, your PhDs and your degrees are not going to come and save you. It's how good and wholesome a life you have lived that matters. So there is little point, we believe, that in educating a young child without instilling and inculcating good values and morals and virtues within them. So that is what we do. And parents who trust us, they've given up their children for a 2-year program, and they're with us, and they train in the companionship of the Mahasangha. So we teach them how to respect their parents. The stuff that we've been talking about here. The value of their parents. The value of teachers. The value of everyone who helps them to stand up on their own 2 feet. Good morals. All that. We teach them the Bible. Can you believe it? And passages from the Holy Quran. Because there's so much to glean from these books. You know, this is the wisdom that has been passed down to us as a human race. The Prophet Muhammad doesn't belong just to the Muslims. He belongs to all of us. And so does Jesus Christ. And so does the Buddha. They belong to all of us. So whatever good was said, whatever good was done, we rejoice in all of them. We learn about these things. So alongside their conventional education, because we prepare them for their ordinary level exams, so by the time they're 16, they'll have to take their exam. So that's what they do. But alongside that, they get this training. And then you'll also see children who are much younger than them. We call them our noble hearts. They're quite literally noble hearts. They're about 20 or so of them. Typically they'll be children of our Anagarikas, and also young children who've been entrusted to us by the probation officers. In other words, they are children who come from orphanages. So we've taken them into our care because we want to give them not just a good education and a meal to save their hunger, but actually a proper upbringing, so that we can change them from a deserving mindset to one that looks to give others the greatness that has been instilled within them. So you'll see a whole bunch of them there as well. Excuse me. They'll be walking alongside the Mahasangha as they make their way to the Dhamma hall. And for all of you who will be there, you'll get the opportunity to hold the Mutukuda, wash the Swaminathan's feet, make the alms offerings, and all that. So there'll be plenty to do. But there is one other thing that Guru Swami Nuhanse wanted me to remind you. And that is this. He wants all of you to make this an opportunity to engage in as many merits as you possibly can, and not to think of this as merely another almsgiving that you can get out just by making a donation. Because usually, that is how it works. But if someone says there's an almsgiving somewhere, usually, I'm not saying all the time, usually it's so easy to just take a few $100 or a few ₹1,000 from your wallet and say, here we go, this is my contribution. That is good, it's okay, but that's not what we're here for. As I always tell you, come here with empty pockets, but leave with a big mind, with a full mind. Come here for what you can take from here. So Guru Swami Nuhanse wanted me to remind that as well. Not so that none of you think that it is just another almsgiving. So let's ensure that it is not that. I know there will be some who may not be able to make it on next Saturday because of various other duties, responsibilities that you might have. But if you do, and if you can, then please come. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I shan't say any more about that, but I need to explain to you what this Panchani Sansa is, because that is important. We call it the Panchani Sansa Mahapuja, because although when you're there, you'll be offering something that is edible. Of course, we offer something that is edible or something that is that, you know, we use as the four requisites. So the four requisites, as you know, are food, shelter, arms, and medicines. Right? These are the four requisites. They call the four requisites, ladies and gentlemen, because without them, you can't sustain yourselves. These are things that the body needs. These are not things that the mind needs. So much so that everything else are things that the mind wants. The Dhamma is what the mind needs, but everything else is what the mind wants. Do we make that distinction clear about what wants and needs are? Now, the body has no wants, does it? All it has are needs. What about the mind? This is the instrument that has wants. This is the animal within you that has desires, that has wants. But the mind also has needs. The only thing that the mind needs is the truth, really. In other words, happiness. But when the mind thinks that happiness is something that it has to seek and get and acquire from the outside, now there are plenty of things, a plethora of things that the mind wants. So you could, if I asked you to make a list of the things that you need, that would be a very short list indeed. But if I asked you to make a list of the things you want, you can be here till next week making that list. In fact, what is life for most people? What is life for most people? It is a journey to acquiring the things that they want. But after all they need is happiness. But what they need, what they have to go after are the things that they want. So, Panchani Sansa, the five rewards. Vitality means life, means the ability to be present. Present where? Present where? I mean, we're all present. Everyone is present. Present where, though? What's so special about this kind of presence, this kind of vitality? Because it is vitality that allows you to be present, right? Life is what has enabled you to be present. But present where? Present in the time of the Buddha's era. Present in the sasana. Present where you're able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha. Remember, all of this is focused on Nibbana. Because you need that presence to be able to attain to Nibbana. What good is it to be born in a time where there is no Buddha? We can eat, we can sleep, we can reproduce, and when it's time, we bid farewell and we are gone. You work hard, yes, you toil, you labor, but all of that will ultimately be to do the things above, previously mentioned, and nothing more. But in the time of a Buddha, human life is very precious. How do you measure the value of your life? I want you to have a think about this. How do you measure the value of your life? Is it by the number of years you've lived? Is it? In which case, you're very poor. I know tortoises, turtles, who live for far longer than you do. 100 years, 120, 150 years. An elephant can quite easily outlive you. So how do you measure the value of life? Is it by the number of years we've lived? Can't be, right? Can't be. If that were the case, then we are very, very poor as a species, as a race. So how else might we measure the value of life? How about our material possessions? How much we have? Wouldn't that be a good measure of how prosperous our lives are? the value of our lives? Could we not measure it by the things that we have, our possessions? What do you think? What do you think? No? Are you sure? Are you sure? Dead certain. That is not how we should measure the value of life. Why so? Why so? Because all that you acquire, one day you must leave behind, mustn't you? So it is only a temporary gain. Right? When you came into this world, ladies and gentlemen, you brought what with you? The same that you'll be taking with you on your departure, which is zilch. Absolutely nothing. Not a speck of hair. So all that, if that were the value of our human life, then actually in the last moment of our life, we amount to nothing. So it's a very temporary measure. So therefore it is not something that we, as sensible, intellectually advanced species that we are, should use to measure the value of life. So let's put that to aside. What else could we use to measure the value of life? How about the number of children we have? A big family, isn't that a good measure? How about if you have a big family, and if you have all your sisters with you? If you have all your brothers and sisters with you? If you can all live in the Mahagedara, with your parents and your grandparents, wouldn't that be a good measure for value of life? No? Why so? Why don't you believe that? Why don't you believe that that is a good measure for the value of life? Once again, the same story as before. Because in those last moments, you are back to nothing. You have to leave everything behind. So, what do you think, honestly, right? Hand on heart, what do you think might be a good measure for the value of life? The value of your life. What did you bring when you came here, into this life? Only the things that you've done, your deeds. So what are you going to take when you go? Your deeds. The deeds and their results are the only things that you can bring and the only things that you can take with you. So that is the currency that is universal. No matter where you go, no matter where you are, it is simply the deeds that you have done that has given you what you have today and that will give you what you will have one day in the future. So the only currency that is yours to keep and no one else can take it away is what? Your merit. Your merit. It cannot be stolen. It cannot be taxed. I mean, that's a tax haven. You don't have to fly to Switzerland for that. If you engage in merits, there's no tax authority that can come and tax you on your merits. Right? So the only possession that you can have that does not get taxed. And what about inheritance? You're not going to lose any of that to your inheritance. You don't have to pass it down to anybody. Because what is something you've earned is something you've earned is for you to keep. How about time? Do you think time destroys it? Merit? No. What about bad weather? What about the elements? Fire. Can a fire destroy your merit? Can it? No. What about a storm? If you built a castle, a storm could destroy that. But the merit that you have done, never. So you see, there's only one currency that you can reliably count on to always be there with you when you need it. And that is merit. That is why the Buddha constantly, there are so many places in the Tripitaka where he praises merits and the power of merits. Here's one. He says, Alam hi sumane, danani datu. Alang punyani kato. So this is a sutta called the Sumana Sutta. In the Tripitaka. It comes in the Anguttara Nikaya. where the Buddha speaks to a lady called Sumana. He says, Sumana, you must engage in the act of charity. And I'll explain to you why in a moment. If you take nothing else from today other than the principle and how the principle of the law of give and get works, I think you'll have gotten a lot from today's talk. So I think that's where this sermon is heading. So we can understand how give and get works. Maybe if we get the time and I feel you're ready, we can dip into how karma works. Karma and vipaka. It is all very scientific. Don't let anyone fool you that it's just skepticism. It's just someone's fairy tale to keep law and order in the world. That's what the laws are for. You don't need karma for that. So he says, Sumana, engage in the act of charity, because charity is what's going to give you whatever you give. Engage in the act of meritorious deeds, because it is your meritorious deeds that's going to help you have a comfortable life. He says, Deva Bhutasapi Upakarani Punyani. Who is Deva Bhutasapi? Deva Bhutasa means the gods, the deities. The gods and the deities, it is merits that help them. See? Have you not seen people who go to the gods and beseech them? Oh dear God, please help me, please look after me, please do what you can to keep me safe and sane. You know, if I were that God, I'd say, go and do some merits, you fool. Because it is merits that helps me. Right? So what are you asking me for? I can't protect you, I can't look after you, I can't do the things you're asking me to do. You go do your own merits, as I've done mine. See, here's the thing, right? If you are someone who understands these principles, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to go beg, borrowing and stealing. You don't need to go begging. I mean, it's a very sorry sight to see a Buddhist, a proper Buddhist. And I don't mean a Buddhist because you are a Buddhist by birthright. I mean a Buddhist is someone who understands the truth about the world. It's a very sorry sight to see a Buddhist going and begging in the Devala. We are not meant to beg. We are disciples of the great Lord. We are disciples of the Buddha. Have you ever heard of the Buddha begging? The Devas and the Brahmas come to him for counsel. The Devas and the Brahmas come to him to get advice, to find out how to enjoy and receive and have more of the riches and the pleasures that they enjoy. They come to him for that advice and counsel. The great kings and the emperors have sought his advice and counsel on how to be a righteous king, on how to live and bring prosperity to their land and to their people. So why, as Buddhists, do we find ourselves begging at the Lord, at the feet of a God? If you feel you must do it, then it's okay. I've got nothing against that. But what I'm saying is, you don't have to. You don't have to. I mean, thank your parents. I think it makes more sense to do that than perhaps going and begging at the feet of a God. You don't have to borrow. You know, you don't have to go and make a deal with the gods. Hey, Mr. God, make me pass my exam and I'll make sure that you are fed for the rest of the month. Deals. Divine deals. You don't have to be like that. Come on, lift yourselves up from that. You don't have to be there. Because our teacher has taught us how to get anything we want. We don't have to go begging, we don't have to go borrowing, and we don't have to go stealing. The Buddhism empowers you. Buddhist philosophy empowers you. I'm not talking about a religion here. I'm talking about the law and effect. The laws and effect. Or the cause and effect. The law of cause and effect. the principles that govern everything. You know, once you understand that, that's it. If you need light, what do? Do you go to the Devala and beg the gods to give you light? You're in a dark room and you need light, what do? You go to the hardware and you buy a bulb. You call the electricity board and you get them to give you a supply, right? And then you put the bulb into the socket and turn the switch on and you have light. Let there be light. And there is light. You can do this because you understand the principle behind how light works, how energy works, how electrical energy can be converted to light energy. You understand this because we learned it at school. See, now you're empowered. You know how light works. You know where to, what is the source of light. So therefore, you don't have to go begging, borrowing, or stealing it. At school, you learned how to make money. At school, you learned how to make ends meet. You went to the driving school and learned how to drive your car. So now you don't have to go beg, borrowing, and stealing. That's all you got to do. If you need something, just learn how to get it. That's it. Wouldn't you all agree with me on that? If you want something, just find out how to get it. Just as everyone before you would have got it, we just have to follow the same principles. Because there is no such thing as magic. All there is logic. But when you don't see the logic, you think it's magic. A magician performs a trick, and you look at it in awe, and you go, wow. Have you ever seen the magician do that? At his own tricks. As he holds his handkerchief and pulls it, and there's a rabbit, and then covers it back again, and then pulls it out, and now there's a parrot, you go what? How did you do that? And you pay him money? All the while the magician is thinking, what a donut. How dumb they are. He tricks you. That's why they're called tricks. You know, a trick is a trick because you don't know how it's performed. So why do you allow yourself to be tricked? When we have the great master who's taught us the principles, the philosophy of how everything works, the phenomenon of how everything works. Once you understand how give and get works, you no longer have to go begging at anybody's feet. You don't. But you really enjoy that. I mean, if you do, I mean, we can talk about something else today. Maybe how, you know, maybe the rabbit and the tortoise race or something like that. Do you enjoy going and begging at someone's feet when you want something? Do you? Do you enjoy going from Devala to Devala? Taking your fruit basket with you? And usually, you know, if you have a note with a higher denomination on the top, you know, those baskets, they tend to be greeted with a smile and you have received more of a welcome and the gods look favorably upon you. Well, you think that's what they use in the heavens? 5,000 rupees, notes. Now, why don't you just put your credit card with the PIN number? And just, you know, appeal to the gods. Gods, just max it out. Come on, we are Buddhists. A Buddhist is not someone by religion. It's not someone who just says Buddhan sarnam gacchami, Dhamman sarnam gacchami, Sanghan sarnam gacchami. That is not what makes you a Buddhist. That's just a stanza. A parrot could recite that. Can't you train a monkey to say that? Buddhan sarnam gacchami. You could. I mean, if you reared a parrot at the monastery, right, or a temple, and you heard this story, the two parrots that fell either side, you know, one fell with the robbers, the other fell with some, ascetics. Right? And that the parrot that fell into the side of the camp of the robbers, you know, he grew up, saying swear words and things like that, bad things, foul language, whereas the parrot that fell onto the good side, right, he was very gracious. Good words, thank yous, polite, very courteous. See, you can train a parrot to do absolutely anything. That's why they're called parrots. So that is not what makes a Buddhist a Buddhist, not the chanting the Buddha Sarnangachami. It is the internalization of that philosophy. Recognizing that Buddha is the refuge. That is not this Buddha. Because if this is the Buddha that is going to give you refuge, I'm sorry to say, you are 2,500 years too late. The horse has bolted. You have missed that boat. Buddha is a transformation that happens within you. That is Buddha. Dhamma is the teaching that makes that transformation happen within you. Sangha is the step-by-step approach that you take to get to that destination that is Buddha. I am only the conventional Sangha. I represent the conventional Sangha in a robe, but the Sangha is not a person. Conventionally, we are referred to as the Mahasangha, right? From the great elder Sariputta Thera to the young monk who was ordained just today, wherever he might be in all four corners of the world. We are conventionally referred to as the Mahasangha, but the Sangha is not a person, it's not an individual. The Sangha is a virtue. It is intangible. You can't touch the Sangha. You can't get on your knees and worship the Sangha. What you do here, it has to be symbolic. Of course, you come up here at the end of a talk and you worship the Mahasangha. But I need you to make sure that it is symbolic. At the beginning, it's okay. At the beginning, it's okay. But, you know, now we've been doing these talks for how long? How many talks now? 10, 12? Something like that? Yeah? So, we have to now start, you know, getting up on our feet. All this while we were crawling on our knees, and now it's time to get up on our feet. Soon enough, you'll be running like a black stallion. I tell you, you'll be galloping. I promise you, just hang in there, one step at a time. By hook or by crook, I will be taking you to Nibbana. That is why this is the gateway to Nibbana. Nice name, isn't it? So who is the Mahasangha? The Mahasangha, or the Sangha, let's just say the Sangha, we call it the Noble Triple Gem. Now when you think of gem, you think of a gemstone, right? Now, typically, you think of the Sangha as a gem because you think gems are precious. Yeah? So why don't we say noble triple diamonds or something like that? Why not noble triple diamond? Why just a gem? Which is more valuable, a gem or a diamond? Clearly, diamonds. Diamonds are more valuable, more precious than gems. So why settle for gems then? Why don't we go all the way to diamonds? Even better, let's go kryptonite. The noble triple kryptonite. Gives you superhuman powers. Once again, the gem is a crude translation of the word ratna. It's a very crude translation. You know, you look the word up, ratna, in the dictionary, and it will tell you the direct translation of that is gem. So what did we do? We just picked the word gem and we just went with it. And today people think that it is used because a gem is a precious stone. So how precious do you think a gem is to the Buddha, for instance? To an arahant? Do you think you can delight an arahant by offering a gem to him? Do you think? Think about this for a second. You're lost in a desert. You have a bag full of gems. You're thirsty. I have a bottle of water, you have a bag full of gems. Which one's more precious? Come on. Yes? Still the gems? Which one would you give your right arm for? The gem or the bottle of water? So are gems really precious? No. It's only precious because we live here on a planet where they're hard to find. That's all. If we were all shifted to a planet where the entire planet was made of gems, now how precious do you think gems would be? Nothing at all. So when you say the noble triple gem, you know, let's not change the lingo, it's fine, we'll continue to say the noble triple gem, but gem is not that gem. It is something much, much, much more profound than that. Ratna is something else. Like sarana is something else. You know, all these words, dear ladies and gentlemen, you know, they were gifts to us. They contain vast oceans of wisdom. But you need to look at it from that angle. You need to look at it through that lens. Ratna is the ability to cool you. That is what ratna is. It is the ability, it is the quality to cool you down, to appease your fears, to assuage your grief. That is what ratna means. To turn out the fire, to extinguish the flames. That is what ratna means. If I were doing this sermon in Sinhalese, I would have explained it to you in much better words and terminology. Because it has an etymology. Etymology is how words are made up. And the meaning behind the syllables that make up the word. But if I continued in Sinhalese, there will be those here whom I would not be doing any favors. So I don't want to do that. And there are those who join these sermons online. But hey-ho, that is why you can come to the monastery. That is what ratna means. Just for the time being, accept that is what ratna means. So, gem, in my humble opinion, does not cut the bill. But that's okay. So, that is what sangha is. So, Buddha is the destination that you are all heading to, which is freeing yourself from suffering. Dhamma is the path. It's the teaching that helps you get there, and Sangha is the approach that you have to take. You know, the word Sangha means eradication of ignorance and attachment. That is what Sangha means. It is not me. I am not the Sangha. This is just a body. This is just flesh and bones and muscle. That's all this is. The robe represents the Sangha. That's it. So Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. Vitality, which is Ayu, is required to be present in a time, in an era where the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha prevails. Like the time that we are here. Like now. Because right now, there is a Dhamma. There is the Sangha and there is the Buddha. In a time where there is no Buddha, now I'm referring to the Buddha, right? In a time where there is no Buddha to proclaim the teaching, to proclaim the Four Noble Truths, to give us the teaching, having found it for himself, having discovered it for himself, to give us the teaching, in a time where there is no Buddha, all we do is go after our pursuits of sensual pleasures and material delights, and that is the end of our lives. That's it. Yes, of course, we may have rendered some service to the world, right? We will have done a few things. We'll have built a few houses, maybe a few castles, right? Maybe we'll have acquired some possessions. But you know, at the end of the day, we leave all that behind. You come empty-handed and you leave empty-handed. So what's the point? So the only currency, the only possession that you can take with you is your merits. So when you're there tomorrow, sorry, not tomorrow, but next week, making those offerings, whatever it might be, it might be a basket of flowers, a tray of flowers, it might be holding the Muthukuda, right? It might be an Attapirikara, right? It might be just a, you know, some food, either to the best of Buddha Puja or to the Swami, Nan says. I need you to see beyond the material offering. Because the material offering is made for a different purpose. Do you think it's the same, these two things? One, an almsgiving at the monastery, where there are Swami Nuhan says, anagarikas and anagarikas who are diligently practicing the path to free themselves and to free others who they cross their paths with. And two, throwing a party at home because it's your 50th wedding. No, you don't last that long. 25th wedding anniversary. Do you think it's the same thing? How about a party that you throw because you've had a promotion at work? Do you think it's the same thing? What's the difference? Because let's look at what's similar. You either order food, right, or you prepare the food and you get some people to come round, or you go to someone's place and you serve the food, right? You have a laugh, you have a chit-chat, you know, a bit of banter, right, a bit of a chin-wag, exchange ideas, you know, change numbers and whatever. Right, you have a laugh, enjoy yourself, maybe have a dance, maybe a sing-along, right? Do whatever and spend a few hours, and at the end of that, everyone goes home and the lights go out. That's one. What have you really gained by doing that? What have you really, really gained? Yes, you've got your promotion and now everybody knows about it. That's good. You've been kind and you've been grateful, so you've asked people to come around and you're telling them here, hey, you know what, I've managed to get my promotion, and everyone's giving you a pat on the back, everyone's congratulating you, right? And they're giving you their compliments and saying, wow, you know, I knew you would do it, right? No, they didn't. They're only saying that now because you actually did it, right? But, you know, that's what you have to say, so they'll say it, right? I knew you would do it, I knew you were going to get it, right? They'll say all that. So, you know, they'll be blowing your trumpet so that you feel good about yourself. You'll be blowing your own when they stop doing it so that you feel good about yourself, right? So you get together, have a meal, have a dance, have a song, and here's what happens. You forget life's problems for a duration of time. But when the lights go out and everyone has to leave, now there's the washes, the dishes to wash and the house to clean, and there's a day waiting to start tomorrow. And then it's back to square one, right? The usual drill, the rat race just has to go on. Now think about the people you have fed. Today they may be friends, but you know, the one day where you forget to wish them for their birthday, for instance. Maybe the one day you forget to go, you're too busy to go to their party. Or maybe the day that, you know, their child passes the exam and you forget to send them a present or a gift or something. Or maybe, you know, a slip of the tongue and some words are exchanged, you know, just in the heat of the moment. Didn't mean anything, really, but in the heat of the moment, right? Now what do they do? Those who were best friends can overnight become no more friends at all. So what about the food that you fed them? What about the entertaining that you gave them? What about the band you ordered so that they could entertain, they could play good music and entertain them throughout the night? What about all that? And besides, you know, the food that they've eaten, they would have eaten at home anyhow. Right? The difference is you fed them. And by the way, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be doing any of these things. So please don't get me wrong. You must entertain your guests, right? Invite your friends over, right? Have a good time, and do all that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the difference between this, what we're talking about, sensual enjoyment, and Ayuvarna Sapabala Patibhananyana, the difference. Just in case you think, well, is it not the same thing, Swami Nuhan sir? Because I have had people in my life who've come up to me and said, Swami Nuhan sir, there are two people who when I see, I run a mile. One, the policeman, I think I've shared this story with you before, and two, a monk. When I see them, I run a mile. Because the policeman, if they stop me, then they're after something no good, and I have to please them. And the monk, the same. If ever I walk into the temple, they'll always be going on about what they don't have and what they need to have and how I should be providing them with all these things. I've had people who come up to me and, you know, they've just been very honest. And that's perfectly fine. They've just been very honest and, you know, in their experience, that is true. It might be true. But the Buddha Sasana is a very different thing. It's somewhere you come to make an investment. If you feed your friends, if you give them a party, they'll talk about it until the next big party. Right? Because you could throw a grand party, but that's just grand for now because the next party is going to be even more grand. And then, what are they all going to talk about? That party. And you feeding them, you entertaining them, all of that they're going to remember for a short period of time. After that, you know, life takes over and they have to move on, right? And as I said, if a few words are exchanged and, you know, some heartbreak or maybe, you know, just a heartache or maybe even something that should not have been said but in the heat of the moment it was just uttered without, you know, too much thinking or too much thought going into it, right? Then people fall apart. And then after that, they forget. How many times have you thought to people, you know, thought about people and thought, you know, they should be more grateful than that for all the things I've done for them? When they were in the lurch, you know, I helped them up, I gave them, I offered a helping hand. He was this man, you know, he was without a job. He was without a way to make ends meet and I was the one who got him in. I fed him, I looked after him, I sheltered his family. I helped his children find a job. And now look at the way they're treating me. That's what people are like. What do you expect? Remember the other day I said, be grateful but don't expect gratitude. Be grateful but never expect it. Because whatever you expect will only bring you suffering. Expectation is the root of suffering. But that is what people are. That's what people are like. And you've got to forgive them for that. They don't do it out of vice. And they don't do it out of spite. They do it because, for the very simple reason, folks, that, you know, they have to do the daily meal. You know, it's just it's a daily battle for them. You may remember all the good that you've done for others, but for them, you know, it's a daily survival. Today's problem is today's problem. Move on to tomorrow, it's a whole new ball game. Today, perhaps you help them pay the bills and to keep them from getting kicked out of their rental home. But tomorrow, their daughter's just eloped with someone. That is their problem now. If you can find their daughter for them, now they'll be grateful. Because now, that is their biggest vexation. That is their biggest problem. So don't go expecting them, excuse me, don't now go expecting them to be grateful for you having paid their rent. That's not how it works. Soon enough you'll understand why this is. Because there is no being that exists from right from beginning to end. All there is are individual thoughts that arise and pass away. Whatever the problem is now is the biggest problem now. You know, you live in the moment really. There is nothing you have to do to particularly live in the moment. Nowadays people, you know, it's become a fashion. It's become, excuse me, it's become the trend now, right? To try and live in the moment. Well, the truth is, you're all actually living in the moment. You just don't know it. Sorry. This living in the moment business, people are making a business out of it. But you're actually living in the moment. It's more glorified than it really is. You really are living in the moment. You are actually in the moment. Whether you believe it or not, you are in the moment. So, if we expect others to be grateful for everything we've done for them, right, then you'll always be very disappointed. But the sasana is a very different thing. Now again, once again, when I say the sasana, I want you to not think of me, a monk, as the sasana. Here's the truth. I am not the sasana. I have come for the sasana just as much as you have. I am reaping benefit from the sasana just as much as you have. So therefore, you and I, we are both taking refuge in the sasana. I am not the sasana. Why do I say this? Here's why. I see every day, you know, after we do the sermon, and myself and Swami Nasa comes out with our arms closed, I can sense the devotion, the reverence, the respect, and the regard that you have towards someone. I have a problem with that. Your respect is directed at the moment towards me as an individual. You are impressed by me as an individual. Maybe not all of you, but some of you. I have a problem with that. Here's the problem. One day, if you ever catch me doing something I shouldn't be doing, as the Swami said, let's say you get news that one day someone finds me in a room with someone of the opposite sex. Right? Now, what's going to happen to people who were impressed by me and thinking that I am the Sangha? Now you'll go around saying, this Sangha. They're all the same. A useless bunch of prats. They're just up to no good. They feed off of us. Unvirtuous. They're just pretending to be holy. See, the problem with being impressed by me? If you think that I am the Sangha, then if ever you find me doing something I shouldn't be doing, if ever you find me, even if, you know, it doesn't matter whether I've done it for the right reasons. Perhaps you just, you know, catch me out of, you know, just, you know, inadvertently catch me doing something that I shouldn't be doing. If it is me you're impressed by, then it will be me you will be unimpressed by. Mahasangha is not I. It's not me. I aspire to be the Mahasangha. It will always and forever be an aspiration. Even an Arahatan Mahanse on his own, an individual, is not the Mahasangha. Because the Mahasangha is not a person. It's a virtue. It's a quality. So when you make that offering, I need you to contemplate on the virtue of the Mahasangha, not about this monk, or any monk for that matter. And if you are intelligent and wise enough to do so, ladies and gentlemen, I assure you that the devotion, the commitment, and the respect and reverence that you have towards the Mahasangha will never be eroded by whatever you see people in robes doing. Because that is your destruction. If ever you feel... I'm looking for the right word. Repulsed. If ever you feel disgusted by the actions of one monk, bear in mind that that is just the actions of one human being. It is our duty, most certainly, as is expected by our great teacher, to be living and walking examples He expects us to be exemplary symbols of the Mahasangha. But we have our weaknesses. There's only one perfect being, and I'm not that. He's the perfect one, not me. I'm still learning. And the same goes for virtually every other monk out there. But the long and short of all this is, when you make your respect, when you make your reverence, and whenever you make an offering, the other day a gentleman came and offered a robe. And that reminded me of the robe that was offered to the great master, to our Lord, by Mahaprajapati, his stepmother. If you recall the story, I'll remind you very briefly, as she brought the robe to offer to the Buddha, Venerable Ananda intervened. And he said, "Sir, your stepmother is here to offer a robe to you. Please accept it." And what was the Buddha's response? "I reject it." Can you imagine what Prajapati Devi must have felt? What the Queen Prajapati must have felt upon hearing this news? My son, the Buddha, he rejects my offering? But Venerable Ananda, has he forgotten that it was I who fed him when his mother passed away? Has he forgotten that it was I who looked after him? As if my own. I gave up my own son so that I could dedicate myself to him as his mother. Has he forgotten that? So, Venerable Ananda, always so graceful, and always so gentle, and always so kind, walks back to the Buddha and says, "Venerable sir, please, I think you should reconsider your position on this. Perhaps you should reconsider and accept the offering." And the Buddha says, "No, I reject it." So he takes the story back. And again he returns. "But please, Buddha, on the third occasion I'm making this request to you, I beseech you, please, would you accept this offering?" And what was the Buddha's response? "Ananda, the reason I don't accept this is because I understand the value of a mother. You all stood here trying to explain to me that this was my stepmother and she was the one who looked after me. She doted on me, she loved me, and she loves every cell of my body. You're trying to explain that to me. I understand the love of mother far more than you will ever in your whole existence. Because I'm the Buddha." I mean, not me, this is the Buddha saying so. Right? "So I understand this. And that is why I reject this offer, because I want her to make this offering not to me, but to whom? The Mahasangha. Because when you make an offering to the Mahasangha, I am included." See, so even the Buddha rejects individual offerings wherever possible. That is because the Buddha's message here is, be not impressed by an individual. Because after all, ladies and gentlemen, when you cut us, there is no individual here at all. I will explain to that as we proceed and go further in our discussions. There is no individual here, although you think there is one. But what there is are the virtues. What there is are the qualities. Otherwise, how come we've had so many Buddhas? There, you know this, right? Deepankara, Padmottara, and so on. Right? We've had Sikhi, so many Buddhas. So if the Buddha passes away, how can there be another Buddha? That is only possible because a bodhisattva aspires to instill in his mind the virtues of a Buddha. Therefore, the virtues of the Buddha never die. That is immortal. He who becomes a Buddha is he who becomes someone who possesses those qualities. And they die. They pass away. But the Buddha, the virtue of a Buddha, never passes away. Do you still not pay regard to in the name of your mother, in the name of your father, if they've passed away? You talk about the goodness that they've done for you? See, they've passed away, but you still talk about the good that they've done, right? It's the same thing. So whenever we think about the Mahasangha, I need you to think about the virtues, the qualities that entail the Sangha. Now you'll often chant this gatha, Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. Let's just take one of them. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. It is not talking about anyone, is it? What is the stanza that we use to worship the Buddha? Itipi, So Bhagava, Arahan, Samma Sambuddho. Right, hold on. I'm going to say it out loud. You tell me when you hear his name, okay? His name was Gautama. You tell me when you hear his name. Itipi, So Bhagava, Arahan, Samma Sambuddho, Vichacharna Sampanno, Sugato, Loka Vidu, Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati, Satta Deva Manusanam, Buddho Bhagavati. Why didn't you stop me? Why didn't you stop me? What didn't you hear? His name. So you are not making a veneration to him. It is not an individual. See, as we chanted that, what we were saying out loud, what we were reflecting on were the qualities of a Buddha. It is not really the qualities of a Buddha. It is the Buddha qualities. The mind is capable of instilling those values, those qualities within us or within itself. That is what we do here. One day you will all become arahants, if that is your destiny. If you are all meant to be disciples of this Buddha, then you will all become arahants. There is no way you are going to become a Pacheka Buddha. But if you are not meant to be the disciple of a Buddha, then perhaps you will go on to become a Supreme Buddha. Either way, all you do is practice the perfections. As you practice the perfections, the qualities that entail a Buddha are instilled in your mind. So you see, when we make that worship, when we do that worship, when we make that reverence, you know, I want you to think of a body. This body, not the muscular body, not the physical body, this is a body of virtue. This is a body of quality. This is a body of characteristics. That is what it is. It is intangible. There's no size to it. That's why they call it infinite. It doesn't take up space. And it doesn't take time. So you can't chart it on the time-space continuum. It doesn't take space, it doesn't take time. It is not physical. It's just out there. Where? Everywhere. So what are we trying to do here then? We are trying to take the approach of Sangha, which is the eradication of ignorance and attachment. And the path that we are walking down is called the Dhamma. You've heard this phrase, Yo Dhammam Passati, So Mam Passati. The Buddha says, if you've seen the Dhamma, you've seen me. Now see the meaning behind this. If you've seen the Dhamma, what that means is, the Dhamma, how do you see a path? Just think about it. There's a long path, okay? A winding path, let's say. How do you see the whole path? The path is paved by what? Walking it. Yeah, you see the path by walking it. Every step you take, you see the next step. And then you take another step. And then you see what's ahead of you. And you take another step. And this is how you walk the path. Now you see, so dhammam passati, so mam passati. Every step you take on the path, by the mount with which you, by which you have made that journey, you have become a Buddha. So once you've completed that journey, you are a complete Buddha. If you've gone halfway, you are halfway Buddha. Now, we don't have names for these things. So don't come asking me, what is the name for a halfway Buddha? There are no such names. But you know the stream enterer. The stream enterer is someone who has understood what Buddha is about. They understand how to become one. That is a stream enterer. The stream that takes them to Buddhahood, which is the equivalent of the path that I talked about earlier. The stream. Because once you're in the stream, you just keep on flowing with the water. And that takes you to the ocean that is the Buddha. Now, of course, you understand these are all metaphors, right? These are all metaphors. So there is no ocean anywhere that I can take you on and go and dip you in so you can become a Buddha. Right? So this is a journey that you're on, and the destination is not a place that you get to, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a place. There's no door you can go on knocking on. So you can't go knocking on heaven's door. Certainly you can't knock on Nibbana's door. When you get there, in other words, once you have fulfilled the journey, the Buddha, you will meet the Buddha. Where? Where will he be? Waiting for you? With the kettle on? Where will the Buddha be when you complete the journey? Where? Where? Within you. That is where the Buddha will be. So when, you know, this is just a statue. It's a bit of clay, maybe stone, maybe fiberglass, maybe cement, maybe wood. It's just a statue. So people ask, are Buddhist idol worshippers? Now you see, Swaminarayan has come and worship in front of the Buddha. So a good question for you to be asking would be, why do you worship a block of cement? And why do you have to face that direction? Good questions. Questions that young people these days tend to ask, because you know they don't just take things at face value. They question everything. I like that. There's nothing wrong with questioning everything, provided when it begins to make sense, you understand it. Because you're asking questions for the sake of asking questions, then that's a pointless conversation to be had. But if you're asking questions because you seek the truth, and when found, you will embark yourself on that truth, on the journey to seeking truth, then you know that's a conversation that is worth having. Otherwise it's just a bit of banter, just wasting time. So you might ask, why Swami Nuanza do we make these offerings? Why do we lay down flowers? Why do we lay down water? Why do we do the Buddha Puja at all? Because this is what you'll be doing next week. Why do we make that offering? Because at the monastery there will be a big Buddha statue. Of course. And does the Buddha eat it? You might ask. So why do we work so hard for it? At least you might say, you know, Swami Nansa, for you it makes sense because you at least eat it. Right? So, but why do we offer it for the Buddha? He doesn't eat it. And then we have to throw it away. Why? Good questions. Very good questions. To find the answers to this, ladies and gentlemen, you have to begin to see beyond what meets the eye. I don't mean supernatural world. I don't mean spirits and ghosts and things and like that. I mean, understand that the Buddha, this is just symbolic. In fact, let me put it this way. What? It's already 10:15. Is that the right time? 10:15. Good heavens. Time flies. We need a fly catcher. Because time flies. I shouldn't try comedy. Anyway. What were we talking about? Buddha Puja. Buddha Puja. So you'll be asking me next week, or you'll be asking me perhaps on the Sunday after next Saturday, maybe you'll at least you'll have this question in your mind. Maybe these are the questions you never bothered to ask the monk. Because you thought it was disrespectful, perhaps. Or you might offend them by asking these questions. Perhaps you might have thought. In Buddhism, in Buddhist philosophy, you can't offend. If I could be offended by the things that you say, what is Buddhist about me? If I can be offended by something you say, what is Buddhist about me? Yeah? So there is no offense. There are no offensive questions in Buddhist philosophy. Maybe in religion. Because religion is an institution. Right? A religion is an institution which is, you know, it has a ruler, it has people, there are roles and figures, and you know, there are rituals and rites, because it's an institution. Like a family, it's an institution. Right? Like legislature, like a country, it's an institution. So, you know, there are things that you have to treat with due regard and respect and so on. But philosophy, you know, there are no stones unturned. There are no holes barred. So, this is symbolic. Oh, I was going to say, the reason that we have a Buddha statue today is because many years ago, people actually understood, people really understood that Buddha was a transformation that was to happen within them. But over time, culture, religion, and all those things began to become part and parcel of philosophy. People began to forget that Buddhism is a philosophy, and they began to think of Buddhism as a religion. So when there's a religion, there has to be a religious leader so that we can follow. The reason that we have a statue today is because people ask, what did the Buddha look like? And you have to have an answer to that question. Back then, people never asked that question. Not because the Buddha was still alive, but because they realized that the Buddha is not someone you see through your eyes. The Buddha is someone you become within. So therefore, they never asked the question, what did the Buddha look like? But today, we've forgotten our roots. The profoundness of the teaching is almost lost, but it's still there. Still there. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in the sasana today. The profoundness of the teaching is still there. So today, people have forgotten. They completely misunderstood, misconstrued, misinterpreted the Buddha, and they think that the Buddha was a figure, a person, an individual. He was, yes, but that is only in a conventional sense. We can never become this Buddha. He's dead. Passed away. Parinibbana. But the Buddha that he gifted to us was not a person. It's what you and I, we can all aspire to and become. So, if Buddha is something you become, make me a statue of that. What does that look like? If Buddha is something you have to aspire to and become, what does that look like? Like this? Does it look like this? No, it's not something that has an image. It's not something physical. It doesn't have a weight. It doesn't have a length, breadth, or width. It is not something you can touch. It is a virtue. It is something you become. Like kindness. What does kindness look like? Draw kindness for me, if you will. What does gentleness look like? What does it look like? Can you draw kindness for me? What color is it? Pink? Kindness? What do you make it out of? Stone or brick? If I asked you to make an image of kindness, what would you make it out of? You'd throw it back at me, wouldn't you? And tell me, Swaminas, what are you asking us to do? It's just... The proposition itself is just absurd. You can't make kindness out of anything. Kindness is not something you can make. It's a virtue that we aspire to. In the same way, Buddha is a virtue that we aspire to. The Nava Arahadi Buddha Guna. See, Buddha Guna, virtues. Now the Buddha summed up, he summarized the virtues that make the Buddha into 9 of these virtues, which is what we recite when we say Itipi So Bhagava and so on. But it is not, it's not a hymn, if you like. It's not a bard, if you like. It's not something that you sing to praise and honor the Buddha. It is in fact a reflection. So one day, when you really understand the meaning behind it, ladies and gentlemen, I know that you will be contemplating on it as you chant it, because it is a reflection. Not a song of praise that you sing to a great warrior. It is not something like that. Although it is used like that out there, and we've got nothing against that. Right? So long may that continue, but you're now taking a slightly different journey. So I'm trying to help you stand up on your own two feet now. Right? So we've been crawling for a while, now let's get up on our own two feet. And as I said, one day you will gallop. But for that we need to understand the profoundness that is contained within these things. The Dhamma is the same. The Dhamma is not the scriptures within the Tripitaka. You can't touch the Dhamma. I think the Dhamma is easy to understand. You know it's not the Tripitaka, it's not the pages of the Tripitaka, right? It's not that. You know the Dhamma is the teaching. Fair enough. But the Sangha, again, it's easy to think that it is a person. I am not an embodiment of the Sangha. I aspire to be Sangha. Even me as a monk, I aspire to be Sangha. When Sangha is complete within me, I will have attained Nibbana entirely. That is what I aspire to. I will have become an Arahant when I have become wholly Sangha. So then I can't be Sangha, can I? If I am still aspiring to be Sangha, I can't be Sangha. But conventionally, you can refer to me as a Sangha Avahansi. That's fine. Because there's a conventional Sangha and there's the absolute Sangha. What is the absolute Sangha? The Sravaka Sangha. See? Supatipanno, Bhagavato, Sravaka Sangha. So I was going to say, I'll explain one quality. Supatipanno. Supatipanno. Meaning, Su is another word for Nibbana. Su is a word for Nibbana. It means Nibbana. Patipanna means having attained, having approached, having entered the path to Nibbana. That is how one becomes Sangha. Supatipanna, who? Bhagavato? Sravaka Sangha. Sravaka Sangha. And then later on you hear, Yadidan Chattari. Chattari. 4. Purisa Yugani. Meaning, Yugani is pairs. 4 pairs. In total, 8. Atta, 8. Purisa Puggala. There are 8 individuals, Savaka Sangha. Are the Savaka Sangha? Now, who are these 8? Monks? Nuns? Are they? No. Sotapannas. Stream enterers. On the path and having attained the fruit. Sakrudagami. Or referred to as once enterers, once returners. On the path and having attained the fruits. Anagamis. Non-returners. Because they don't return to the karma worlds again. On the path and having attained the fruits. Arahants, the saints. On the path and having attained the fruits. So where is the reference to Sangha, Swaminuhanse? Where is the reference to a monk? Did you hear the name of any monk? In the Supatipanna Bhagavato Savaka Sangha, did you hear the name of the Mahanayaka Thera? Did you? Or the Arunayaka Theras? No. So we're not talking about an individual here. We are talking about something we all aspire to. The Margapala. Meaning, fulfilling the Dhamma so that our minds instill the virtues and the values that represent the Sangha. So, Ayuvanna Sapabala Patibhana Jnana. Next week when you're at the monastery and you make your offerings, ladies and gentlemen, as the Buddha reminded Venerable Ananda, it is because I understand the value of a mother, I want my stepmother to make this offering to the Sangha. That is not me as an individual. Because, you know, Mahaprajapati, the queen, she came looking to make that offering to whom? The Buddha as an individual. That is all she was interested in. So she wanted to make her worship, her veneration, her offering to an individual. But the Buddha understands that it is infinitely more virtuous, infinitely more meritable to make that offering to the Mahasangha. Again, the Mahasangha is not one individual. It is a quality. It is a virtue. So when you are there next week, whatever it is in your hands, ladies and gentlemen, worry not and concern yourselves not about the size of it. As you bring the Buddha Puja, perhaps you will bring something as big as this. Perhaps you will bring something as big as this. Perhaps something as big as this. This is all that will be given to you. Put it on your hand and bring it with great respect. Because the size doesn't matter. What matters is the intention that you have within you. The intention of willing and wishing to offer vitality, health, energy, comfort, and wisdom to those who need it on their quest to what? The ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Because these five things are the things that these offerings, the four requisites, can give them, can offer them. Because what does food do? It gives you vitality. It helps you to be present. Present where? Where the Dhamma prevails. Where the Sangha prevails. Where the Buddha prevails. In an era where the Buddha prevails. Because without food, what would happen to all of us? We would all perish. And if that happened to us now, what would we lose? What do you think we'd lose? Just our lives? No, something much, much bigger than just our lives. Because if you lose a life, you get another one. I mean, even a cat has 9 lives. So they say. Right? So if you lose your life, don't you worry, you'll get another one. But that's not what we lose if we die. We lose the opportunity to be in the presence of the Noble Triple Gem. Energy. You need energy to practice the path. To be present, to be alert, to be awake, to understand. Energy. We need energy. We need comfort. We need a certain amount of comfort. Not luxury, a certain amount of comfort. So that, you know, when it rains, we don't get wet. When it's hot, we don't have to sweat. A certain amount of comfort. Because we are burdened by the body that we have to carry. As much as the mind might be strong and might be firm, right? The body still suffers. I mean, when I'm hungry, I feel hunger just the same as any of you do. We feel all that the same way. The Buddha feels hunger the same way as you and I do. There's no difference there. Because that's how the body feels. This is just an instrument we have to carry around with us. So, when you're hungry, when you're weak, when you're feeble, right, when you can't get yourself up, when you can't keep yourself awake, because you're lacking energy, because you're lacking vitality, how can you practice the path? That is what I need you to have in your mind when you make those offerings. And finally, Patibhana Jnana, wisdom. So the aggregation of all that, Ayu, Varna, Sapa, Bala, and the four of them, into Patibhana Jnana. In other words, make that resolve in your mind. By the offering that I make, may the monks, the Swaminarayans, the Anagarikas and Anagarikas, and whoever consumes this, be able to practice the noble path and attain through wisdom the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. That is what I need you to have running between your ears. Why do I say this? What you give is what you get. That's right. Let me put it this way. Give me some rice and you will get some rice. Give me a cloth and you will get one. Give me a place to stay and you will get a place to stay. Give me some medicines and you will get that. But give me ayu. Give me Vanna, give me Sapa, give me Bala, give me Patibhana Jnana. Regardless of what you have in your hand, because this is simply symbolic, it's just a representation of the thought, the intention that you have in your mind. Give those five things wholeheartedly, and that is what you shall get. Ayu, Varna, Sapa, Bala, and Patibhana Jnana on your journey to Nibbana. So give the path to Nibbana, the means to Nibbana, the opportunity for Nibbana, Make Nibbana comfortable. Make Nibbana easy. Make the path, make traversing the path easy and light to do, and you shall get the same in return. That is why giving to the Mahasangha, giving to the Sasana is like no other. It is not like inviting your friends round and throwing a party or feeding them. Because when you invite your friends round, what you give them is not the path to Nibbana. What you give them is energy, yes. You fill their mouths, you fill their stomach, yes, so that they can go and enjoy a sensual life. Right? You cook food, you cook delicious food, so that they can enjoy the food, right? When you cook a meal for the Swami Nuhan says, bear in mind that they don't eat it to enjoy themselves. That is why we do the Pratyaviksha, which is a reflection. Patisankha yoniso pindapatam patisevami. You will hear the monks chant it before they take their meal at the monastery. And that is not because the monks have to chant it out loud. They don't have to. So if you see a monk not chanting it, that's not because they're not doing that. So don't take it wrong. It's not that we have to, but we do it because we want to remind you, as devotees who have made this offering, that we make a promise to you that we only use what you have given us for that purpose and that purpose alone. Because we know that it's not because you have nothing better to do or nobody else to give to that you bring it and offer it to the Swami Nonsense. We want you to do it in the sake of your own Nibbana. Because Nibbana is all we are about. And therefore, the interaction that we have, the relationship that we have between you and I, between each other, between all of us, is that relationship of noble companionship. Noble companionship is a companionship that leads us, both parties on either side, to nobleness. And what greater nobleness is there than the nobleness of Nibbana? Now do you understand the significance of this Panchani Sansapinkam? So it is not just an offering. That is why Guru Hamara reminded me, please inform them to not just get away by making an offering and deciding not to turn up for it. So once again, I know some of you may not be able to arrive because duties, responsibilities and so on. We understand that. But if you can, you know, just that one Saturday, if you can make an arrangement, do come. If so much has happened in your life, listening to what I have to say, wait and see what will happen to you when my teacher has spoken to you. He made me. Guess what he can do to you then? So noble companionship is what we are all about at our monastery. Talking about noble companionship, I want to show the video. A few of you have been asking lately, Swami Nanda, we understand this now, we are beginning to understand, we are beginning to make some changes in our lives internally to walk this path. What can you offer in terms of our children? They need help. We want them to be able to take a different path to the ones that we took because it was too late, perhaps in the case of some of us, when we came across the teaching. If we had come across this much earlier in our lives, right, our lives would have been a different story altogether. So how can we ensure that our children get this exposure? We can't trust everybody, we can't trust them with everybody, but we are beginning to see that there is something here. But please, you know, don't trust me. Come and see. But as you've asked me a few times now, I've brought with me a short video clip that shows you, or that will give you some detail about the Dhamma school that we have at our monastery. So have a look at it, just watch it for a second, and then I'll fill you in on some more of the detail.
The Sivamogga Dhamma school has earned a very special place in the hearts of many as the school of life for a growing population of several hundred of its students on and offshore. The children, aged between 7 and 16, are the perfect example of the school's impact on their lives as they develop themselves in virtue, wisdom, and social intelligence. Our Dhamma school provides Dhamma education in both Sinhala and English mediums. The monks, Anagarikas and Anagarikas of the Jetanarama Buddhist Monastery take great care of the children and nourish their minds and intellect while providing them love and protection as they would their own. The fundamental objective of Srimad Dhamma school is to empower the children in our care with practical knowledge and understanding of the Lord Buddha's teachings and help them solve their life's challenges and overcome obstacles to their personal development. The children learn the gems of wisdom contained in scriptures such as the Dhammapada, Lovada Sangharava and Subhashitya, which are full of precious life lessons and moral values, and to help enrich one's life, paving them a path to joyful bliss no matter where their lives might take them in future. But that's not all. At our Dhamma school, we believe that to produce capable young leaders for the 21st century, spiritual upliftment should be coupled with intellectual empowerment. To help strike this balance, our professionally trained teachers provide a mix of leadership and personal development programs and child protection programs throughout the year. Our Dhamma school provides the children excellent opportunities to enrich themselves with merits by engaging in numerous meritorious deeds such as offering alms to the Mahasangha, cultivating and harvesting vegetables and fruits, and cleaning the monastery premises, to name a few. In addition to our on-premise Dhamma school, we conduct an online Dhamma school for children unable to visit the monastery regularly. This option has enabled many hundreds of children to join us from across the globe and over 10 countries. The on-premise Srimad Dhamma school is conducted on Saturdays and Poirays from 2 to 6 p.m. and the online Dhamma school is run every Saturday and Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. In and amidst the noble association of the Mahasangha, the children are empowered with the Dhamma and the vital life skills to help them achieve their ultimate ambition.
Siumanga, the Dhamma school for little hearts with great ambitions.
So that is our Dhamma school, Srimad. It is not a conventional Dhamma school, so we don't teach the syllabus that you would in a typical Dhamma school. So we don't have the exams that you have at Dhamma school. So if you wish for your children to be doing the exams, then this Dhamma school is not the place. I think children have enough exams to worry about already. Because here we train them and teach them to face the exam that is life. Because people pass all other exams and they fail at the exam of life. Because when death comes knocking on their door, it matters not what grades you've gotten and how far you've reached in your academic careers and your success in life there. What matters is how good a human being you have been. Kindness, compassion, loving kindness, these things. The respect, the virtue that you have, the merits that you have earned. Do you understand who the Buddha is? Or what the Buddha is? Do you understand the Dhamma? Do you understand the Sangha? Have you become a stream enterer? So that you are free from the four great hells once and for all. These are the things that we believe really matter. Because we all have had education, not just in this life, folks, in lives, many lives before this. We'll have educated ourselves to, you know, no end. We'll have achieved every other material success in life. But there's one thing we are dead certain we never have achieved, and that is Nirvana. We know that because we are all here today. So therefore we believe that this opportunity we've had in the time of a Buddha, we must use it wisely. So of course, these children, they come to the Dhamma school on a Saturday, and then they go back home, they do their regular education and so on at school. So these are not the children who are with us. I talked about the Youth Academy earlier on, at the start. Those children, they live with us. They train with us. So at the end of the 2-year program, if they wish, they can stay with us and become an anagarika and go on to become monks. Or if they wish, they can leave and go back to their homes and live a proper life. I think, you know, they would make a far better husband than a husband who's a PhD holder in biophysics. Because they will learn how to respect others. They will learn how to be patient and tolerant about others' views and opinions. These are some of the things that we teach them. They will become a far better mother or a far better father in case they go back home. So this is what we do. This is one of the things we do at the monastery. And for those of you who inquired about what is possible and available for your children, you can either bring them along on a Saturday. Now you'll see where you're going to be bringing them when you come next week. Or if the journey is a bit too far, I mean, it's only about 1.25 hours from here, from Colombo. It takes us just over 1 hour to get here on a Sunday morning. Or we have the online Dhamma school, which you can join. And again, that is conducted in both Sinhalese and in English. Soon enough, we'll be starting in some of the other languages that I talked about last week. Swami Nansi here is who conducts some of the English classes. So here we have students who join us from across the globe. You do the Qatar sermon, right? Yeah, so there are a bunch of children who live in Qatar, and we have students from Dubai and Australia and the United Kingdom and Canada, in about 10 countries. So they all join because they understand that although they get all the privileges and all the opportunities that would avail them living in those countries, what they don't get is the association of the noble Sangha. So that is what we strive to enrich their students' lives with. So that is what we have for your children. This is for boys and girls. And our Anagarika Mahatmyas, they look after the girls who come to the monastery. I think there are a few of you who are already students of the Srimarga Dhamma school. Give me a raise of hands, children. Ah, there we go. So there are already some of you around here who join us. So if you want to know about what Srimarga is, you can speak to them. They are our ambassadors. You can ask them what Srimarga is like. So, next week, for any of you who are going to be there at the monastery, it is going to be the Panchani Sansa Mahapinkama. It is not just going to be another Dhani. I don't want you to think of it that way, please, for your sake. At the end of that, we'll be transferring merits. Now, you know we don't transfer merits though, right? What we do is we make an invitation to anyone out there who wishes to rejoice in these merits, may they look at what we've done. May they be happy about what we've done and may they rejoice in it. So they earn their own merits in their own right. So you don't reduce the amount of merits by making a transfer. It's not like that. It's not like a money transfer. So now that you understand some of these things, I think you are now prepared, primed, if you like, for next week's event. I wanted to share these things with you before you were going to make that journey. Otherwise, you would have come along, given the Swami Mahansa's a meal, and I'm sure you would have done that to your fullest ability and potential, but what I want from you will not have happened. Appamadena sampadeta. That would not have happened. You would have been a very good benefactor. You would have been a very good patron of the sasana. But what I need of you and from you is for you to jump on this ship that is a sasana so that we can all make this journey whilst we still have the Buddha's teaching with us. Last words I'll say to you is today, the Buddha proclaimed that his sasana would prevail for 5,000 years. 2,500 of those years have passed. In fact, we are just over halfway. Still, the pristine Dhamma is available. Sparse, few and far between, because there are so many interpretations of the Dhamma now. You know, it's just far too many to even start beginning making sense of. By the time you've expended your life trying to find out which one's the right teaching, even if you do come across the right teaching, by that time you'll have no life left in you. That is the amount and the number of the numerousness of the interpretations that, you know, that present themselves to us. We are to blame for that, because we didn't do what we had to do when the Buddha was around. So now we are just picking up the crumbs, right? But the crumbs are still edible, and we can still do this. So whilst the opportunity still prevails, let us remind ourselves that although 2,500 years are still remaining, that is not true for you and I. That is true for everybody else. Why do I say this? Because you are not going to be hanging around for 2,500 years. That's why. When your time is up, it matters not how much longer the sasana will prevail. When your time is up, time is up. So, once again, I will end this talk. As I said last week, appamadena sampadena. I look forward to seeing you all next week. A brief announcement to make, which I forgot to mention before. There may be those among you who might struggle to understand a sermon or a teaching in Sinhalese, which is the language in which Guru Swami Nuhansi will be delivering his sermon on Saturday next week. And for those of you, we will arrange a separate talk. So if there are those who struggle, genuinely struggle, okay, not just because you prefer it in English, but if you genuinely struggle to understand, because some of you might not be natives, perhaps some who might, you know, you might bring along your friends perhaps who are foreign to our country, but now our friends, you can, even if you wish to bring them along, you can do, and they will, we will arrange a separate program for them, a separate talk for them in English. So if that is required so that we can make such arrangements, kindly inform that to the organizers of the event, and I think they'll make themselves known to you. So just inform them that you will need that, and then we can arrange for that at the monastery. Alright, let us transfer the merits then and bring today's talk to a close. First and foremost then, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude towards the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, let us transfer these merits, as it is they who have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also remind ourselves to be grateful to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to my teacher, Guru Swami Nuhansi, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May, by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who provide your know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May by the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to answer these messages to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our elders and our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, and to our teachers. It is they who have made the difference and the changes then in our lives of which we are proud today. Let us take this moment to transfer these merits to them. May they all rejoice in these merits. May they overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. And may they be healed of any mental and physical obstacles that keep them from working towards their salvation. May by the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to the sasana to protect and fulfill the sasana. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, those who have predeceased us, our ancestors, our forefathers, those whose sacrifices are the reason today we are able to live in comfort. May they all rejoice in the merits that we have all acquired today. Let us also transfer these merits to those who make great sacrifices to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, the members of the armed forces as well as the police force, as well as the people who lead our nation to greatness. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who might have lost their lives in natural disasters, such as the tsunamis and the earthquakes, landslides, fires, blizzards, and the pandemics. May they all rejoice in these merits, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. Let us transfer these merits to all of them. May they all rejoice in these merits, and if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. I beg your pardon. May they all abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become an arahatun vahanse, an arahat teranin vahanse, in this life itself, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you now.
Raga ginnin nidatnva, desha ginnin nidatnva, moha ginnin nidatnva, nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma. Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma. Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatma. Raga
සියලු සත්ත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතදර වෙත්වා. සාදු, සාදු, සාදු.